high drop for Jackie Elka.
Goal! Oh, what a goal! What a goal! Yes! Unbelievable finish to the Merseyside derby!
Welcome to the Softy Blues, your source for all things Everton. And welcome to another podcast where we got loads to get through. The first segment is going to actually involve Thomas, Teddy and the Escrim Everton Business Matters. They're going to be discussing the Everton AGM, which took place virtually earlier on in the week. Following that, it'll be myself along with Paul McAllister and also David from the County Road Bobblers. And we're going to be, of course, previewing the Sheffield Wednesday game in the FA Cup, which is coming on Sunday. And then we'll be finishing with a classic quiz where David's will take on Paul in a matchday squad quiz. But first of all, we'll go straight into, I'll hand you over to Thomas for the AGM breakdown.
My name is Thomas. I hope you are all well. We're back with another video on the channel today. We're going to be talking about the annual general meeting that occurred a few days ago now, joined by, of course, our own Terry McAllister and a very special guest as well. You've almost definitely heard about him on Everton Twitter, the Esc, or, we won't be calling him that during the video. We will be calling him Paul. So, Paul, thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you guys.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much for coming on. Terry, how are you as well? I feel like I've just skipped straight past you.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are. nod to Paul's Talking the Blues podcast there with the brothers Costigan. Yeah, I'm good.
Brilliant. So we will make a start then. Just kind of, Paul, I'll just come to you first. Talk about your general thoughts about the meeting. Of course, if you haven't all checked out Paul's article already, we'll definitely link it in the description. Do check it out. It seems that you were slightly underwhelmed at maybe the substance of the meeting in general.
I think, to be fair to the club, first of all, it's difficult because clearly everything was pre-recorded. It wasn't really a meeting in that sense. I mean, it was a piece of propaganda by the club at the end of the day. They said what they wanted to say and they presented themselves in the manner in which they think is the best manner, which is clearly what anybody would do in the same circumstances. So as a piece of objective reporting about what the club has done, apart from perhaps the figures, because there's not much you can do with the figures are what the figures are. I didn't think it was, you know, either that objective, nor did I really think, to be honest, given the amount of time that they had to prepare it, that it was the best representation of what the club's about and what the club does.
Yeah, Terry, what were your general, just initial thoughts about what emerged from the meeting and how it was presented in general?
Well, I think Paul's got it in one. It was propaganda, really, wasn't it? I think they've looked and thought, there's not a lot of good news we can give. It's not all bad news, obviously, but they've looked at the different compartmentalised segments of it where, you know, obviously Denise, Marcel Brands, Sasha Rozantsev and Bill, and every single part of their, you know, their aspect of the presentation, they just sort of clawed at what can we talk about? There's no good news on the stadium. Not really their fault, entirely their fault, because it's still planning permission. The squad size isn't down to what Marcel wanted to be, which he outlined last year. Financial side of things, you know, it's pretty much the same, isn't it? A record-breaking commercial deal, but wages to turnover is still grim, frankly. And then obviously there was a little bit at the end with Bill Kenwright, where he's asked about the quality of the board, which was just harkening back to the old days of Bill Kenwright when, you know, it was like something that one of Donald Trump's press secretaries would say, this was the biggest inauguration ever, you know, that kind of thing. Like, yeah, we've got the best boards ever. It's revered across, you know, the Premier League and what have you. So it was just trying to put a positive spin on anything. Like, I think at one point they said there's going to be more Evertonians at the club, because they might have just thought, well, people seem to like Leighton Baines. Let's say we're going to do more of that. People will be happy about that, and woefully have misread the mood of supporters. I think they're very lucky that the team's doing well, to be bluntly honest.
Yeah, it was a slightly disappointing presentation in general. It didn't sorry, as Paul mentioned, it wasn't really an objective presentation of any information by any means. And as Terry said there, just maybe something more of a propaganda. I mean, I can see why they've tried to do it that way. And it has been a fairly bleak year, but you think maybe it would reflect the success they've had on the pitch, that they would maybe, you know, take that into their stride with the general meeting, which they didn't really at all. But I wasn't too surprised at the way they kind of presented the information, purely because of, I mean, from a financial perspective, I'm not going to go too much into it. That's definitely what I'm going to come to you two next, because I'm not too knowledgeable on that matter. And there's only so many positive spins you can put on that, or you can only present the positive information in general. So, Paul, for a man like myself who really doesn't know much about finance in terms of football clubs at all, I mean, I can look at sponsorship, stuff like that. How are things looking? Was it surprising? Was it what you expected to see in general?
Just before I answer that, just to go back to the points that the three of us just made, I think most Evertonians would like to be treated as adults. Mm. And, you know, we know it's a really tough time. It's a tough time for almost everybody, you know, in terms of how we're trying to run our lives emotionally for some people because of the circumstances that they're in. But, you know, from a commercial point of view, we all understand it's difficult, and we can all see that Goodison Park has been empty since March. We all know that extremely well. So just do it like as it is. You don't have to spin it for us. We're not shareholders in the sense of like being shareholders of Marks and Spencers or Sainsbury's or, you know, whatever. If I don't like Marks and if I'm a Marks and Spencer's shareholder and I don't like Marks and Spencer's, I can just sell the shares. Or if I don't like what the CEO is saying, I can just sell the shares. It's I don't have an emotional attachment to that, but I do have an emotional attachment to Everton. And they're going to have to say something really pretty bad in the meeting for me to want to sell my Everton shares. And probably almost every one of the 1,400 shareholders would hold the same view. And it's that lack of recognition of who they're talking to that really worries me, that they don't get that we're actually there to support them, because we all want a better football club. And you just be honest with us. That's all I'm asking for. So anyway, sorry, that a little bit over. In terms of the finances, obviously very difficult for a number of reasons. Difficult because we lost revenue that we thought we were going to get. So the revenue from not playing games in front of fans at Goodison. Some of the broadcasting revenue we didn't get for two different reasons. One, because there's a rebate that has to be paid back because the season didn't finish on time. And secondly, because the season didn't finish on time, some of the games fell out of the financial year. So the financial year end was the end of June. And therefore, the revenue that was attached to the games that were played after the 30th of June couldn't be included in this year's accounts. So you see the revenue fall by quite a bit, and I think Sasha said around 30 odd million the revenue fell by because of the season going over the end of the financial year. But on the flip side, there was £30 million of revenue from USM in terms of the Bramley Moor Stadium. That's a complete one-off, it won't be repeated, and it wasn't expected. So revenue was about flat. The problem the club has is that, frankly, we just spend too much money for the amount of money that we earn. We're like a family or an individual that just has a budget bigger than their monthly income. And when that happens, you know what happens. You start using credit cards, you start using overdrafts, until such a point as you can't use them anymore. And that's the thing that we have to address, really. Getting our costs down, which means getting rid of players that aren't productive where we can. But again, I understand the difficulties in doing that, because, you know, as nice a guy as he is, if you're Bolasie and you're on a contract that you're not going to get anywhere else, why on earth would you move? I mean, you know, he has a responsibility. You could argue you might have a responsibility to the club, but ultimately has a greater responsibility to himself. So why would he move? But nevertheless, you know, wages are too high, and the amortization costs that we carry are too high for the amount of revenue that we have. The other question then is, well, how can we increase revenue? And we can increase revenue realistically two different ways. One, by being better in terms of our commercial activities, so having more partners and getting those partners to spend more money with us, or by generating money from selling players. They're effectively the two options that are open to us. Mashiri writing a check for £50 million a year stops the bank manager from getting worried, but it doesn't do anything about our profitability. And that's, you know, I think he's coming to that realization that he can't continue to write £50 million checks every year for two reasons. One, probably he doesn't want to do that. And secondly, from an FFP point of view, and Premier League regulatory point of view. It was interesting, Sasha said that we met the Premier League regulations in terms of how much our losses have been over the last 3 years. And looking at the figures, I can see how we got to that point. Had we been in Europe, I don't think there's any way that we could have got through FFP, because FFP is much, much more stringent than the Premier League regulations. And I think if we do qualify for Europe at the end of this season, it's going to be an issue for us. Now, he did say again, he said that they're in regular conversations with UEFA, and UEFA understand where we're at. And that's good, and it's sensible to do that. But ultimately, if we're only allowed to lose 30 million euros over a three-year period, and we've lost something like £250 million over that period, then obviously there's a big difference between the two, and it can't just be explained away.
Yeah, it certainly feels like we've had, I mean, especially in the Mashiri era as well, a few years of this. I mean, we are still just making loss. We're spending too much in theory, and we are just being bankrolled by Mashiri. And of course, again, as we mentioned before, it is a tricky financial year, but it seems the same, you know, year on year that we are, I mean, we're cutting down the squad size, but I mean, we're not paying, well, Sandro Ramirez, any more players like that. I mean, I don't know what he was getting paid at the club during his time, but stuff like that is, it seems to be the same message that we're getting every year. No matter how much they'd like to sugarcoat it this year, or, you know, for example, because I haven't watched the past few years anyway, apart from, you know, obviously when Marcel Brands came up with his presentation about needing a right winger and a centre half and everything. But it does seem like, even as much as they like to sugarcoat it this year, we're still in the same situation as we have been for a few years. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, just ask Paul, the financial fair play aspect, the European, obviously, model. I've always wondered if, because it's a rolling 3 year sort of period that they look at. Next summer, the Koeman-Walsh sort of season, you know, summer of mistakes, basically, that would come off the rolling 3 year period. Now, I'm not imagining that would have the impact of bringing it down to 30 million euros losses. But could you imagine that they're sort of waiting on that white horse to arrive, and oh, suddenly we'll look a lot better because we'll have the drag factor of that summer won't be taken into the account when they look at our finances if we qualify for Europe. Is there any chance of that? Or
to an extent, yes. But the problem we've got is that our financial performance has got worse year by year. So dropping a year off, which was, you know, not great, but actually was better than the year that you're now bringing in, actually makes your net position worse. So,
because we were in Europe that year, I imagine, and what have you.
Yeah. So our financial performance in 17-18 is going to be better than our performance in 2021. I think, you know, ultimately, I suspect what happens is that we get some sort of penalty from UEFA. I don't think it's going to be a position where UEFA say, sorry, we're not going to give you a license to play either in the Champions League or in the Europa League, depending upon which one we qualify for. I think we either take a fine, or we take a restriction on squad numbers in European games, or even possibly we might have to take a some form of transfer restrictions. But I just think they're taking the view that, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
That's sort of similar to what happened to AC Milan, although they took a big gamble after that. They got a warning and only really got a ban after the...
Yeah, after they chose to ignore it, yeah.
carried on regardless, but we're not at that stage. So, you know, there's a possibility we're telling them now to say, yeah, you're going to have to slap our wrist if we get there, but, you know, we're going to be good boys from now on.
Yeah, I think the issue possibly is not so much UEFA's attitude towards us. It's possibly the attitude of other clubs. So other clubs that maybe have been compliant and you know, done sensible things and kept within the regulations or kept much closer to the regulations than we have, I think legitimately have an argument to say, well, hang on a minute. You know, just a bit like what clubs have been saying in the Championship, you know, with Derby County and Sheffield Wednesday, for example. You know, it's one thing to break the rules, but if you're going to break the rules to take advantage of me, I'm going to complain about the fact that you've done that. And I just wonder about, you know, how many clubs will raise objections, and clubs with far more influence in Europe than we have will raise objections if, as and when we qualify for Europe.
Yeah, and there's other things to go into from the meeting, like the stadium. I don't want to go into the stadium too much because, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of news, and that's all planned permission rather than finances. But something I do want to ask you, Paul, obviously, as you mentioned, we need to improve our revenue. That's basically just the bottom line of it. We can't just keep getting bankrolled by Mashiri. And it seems very simple, but obviously the transfers of players like James Rodriguez, there seems to be a big shift in the kind of international strategy. And whether that's South America, we saw things in Miami. Kind of looking ahead to next year's AGM, do you think that'll have a significant effect? Will it have a smaller effect than maybe some are hoping for?
It's difficult to see how it's going to have a significant effect financially, I'm afraid to say, because whilst we generated a lot of interest, and I think, you know, our number of social media followers have increased, and we've signed a deal with a betting company in Colombia. There's no real mechanisms to generate cash from those activities. So, you know, I don't know what the betting company in Colombia would be paying, you know, a couple of million pounds a year, perhaps something of that size, which is obviously very welcome, but it's not earth shattering. It's not going to change much in terms of the overall finances of the club. You know, the deal that we have with Fanatics is makes it difficult for us to expand naturally. We have to, the manner in which we expand commercially has to fit in with Fanatics' strategy as much as it does with us. And you know, if they haven't got a big presence in Colombia, or if they want to put their resources elsewhere, if they want to put their resources, I don't know, into Miami, for example, you know, just as a case, we're always competing with other clubs because we outsource. So it's difficult to see immediately how we generate more cash from those activities, I'm afraid. That's not to say that we shouldn't be doing it and that we shouldn't be looking to expand the range of commercial partners that we have. Clearly, we need to do that. But it's a bit of a slow burn. It's not going to sort of massively change things. Mm. The thing that changes everything is qualification for the Champions League. If we do manage to stay in or get into the top four and stay there for the end of the season, not only do we generate a lot of cash from the Champions League, you know, 40, 50, 60 million pound, because we'd be guaranteed qualification for the group stage, it does make us much more attractive then to other commercial partners. So perhaps the big strategy should be, let's focus the resources on the pitch and see if we can get in the Champions League. But also, in preparation for that, the people that run the commercial department, Sasha Rise and Stev and others, you know, beating hell out of the phones, talking to every organization they can think of to say, if we do get Champions League qualification, we're going to be knocking on your door for a sponsorship arrangement. Not leaving it till the point where we've got the qualification. Let's be doing that work now.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up sponsorship. That's something they completely left out of the the AGM was this, you know, phantom sleeve sponsor, which still hasn't been filled. It's obviously a minor issue, but I'm sure they put out in December that they were talking to a organisation and they were, you know, progressing well with them, and it's completely gone quiet. So I know a lot of that's to do with, you know, the depressed, you know, market with, you know, COVID-19 and what have you. But that seems to have gone completely quiet as well. Like maybe they're you know, hanging the latch, I don't know, waiting for the right offer. We've still got not got a sleeve sponsor, and it's just the sort of, you know, it's another way of making money that which has gone away and not been replaced.
Yeah, I mean, they indicated to me a little bit before Christmas that they've got interested, or they've got people that are interested in, and people that would do a deal today, but not at a price the club wants. Mm. So the club are taking the view that we'd rather forego the income and get a better deal, either if the economic situation improves because we're moving towards the end of the pandemic, or if, as we were just talking about a few minutes ago, if we do happen to qualify for Champions League, then obviously that becomes a bit of a game changer in terms of how attractive the shirt sleeve is to potential sponsors.
Mm. Well, just on that then, when you say about the massive impact that Champions League would have, it's obviously quite a popular sentiment amongst a lot of supporters, especially on social media, that we should be doing everything we can in this transfer window to sort of make take our chance to get in the top four. Now, I've heard, you know, you described on your other podcast, I'm not sure which one, I think it might have been Business Matters, that the club has already been behaving like a championship club, sort of throwing everything on black, trying to get in, you know, to get into the Premier League, where in our case it's the Champions League. Do you think there's any way that do you think that the club would be saved now to try and do that once more with the best opportunity they've got? Or do you think moving away from that sort of behaviour is the best long-term strategy? Because if it doesn't happen, you're back, you know, you're back in the same boat. Are they even able to do that with the finances the way they are?
I think there's a big question mark over our ability to do it, even if we wanted to do it. You know, they talked, Sasha Rasantsev talked about cash flow. What he didn't say, I mean, they talked about, you know, the net debt position. I think they said it was like just less than £3 million, which sounds great. But in June, there's £58 million of debt to Rights and Media Funding and to Metro Bank, which really didn't get a mention. And also, we didn't pay our tax bill last year, which is perfectly legitimate. And, you know, the government said, as part of their strategy to help businesses, if you've got an outstanding tax bill, don't worry about it. It's not the thing that you need to worry about at this moment in time if cash flow is an issue for the business. So we've got big calls on cash. We've got another £11 million to spend on the stadium, regardless of whether we get planning permission or not. So there's all of these costs that are still coming out of the business, even though the revenues are, you know, the revenues this year are going to be £30 million less than they were last year, because we don't have that £30 million that came from USM, or at least we don't yet have anything to compare with that. So genuinely, I think it's really difficult for the club to, even if they wanted to spend a lot of money in this transfer window, even if, quite rightly, you could argue, if we're close to Champions League, then we should, it's soft to stop now, stop rolling the dice now. But frankly, I don't think we can. The other point is that if the stadium is very close, and if planning permission is, you know, close in the next couple of months, we've got to address the lenders to the stadium before the end of the financial year. And they will already be very concerned about the underlying strength of the business. There's a business case for building the stadium, and we know it will generate enough cash to meet the financing costs. That's fairly well established. But if the underlying business is still losing lots of money, the lenders will be concerned about that. So I think that's another factor which wasn't mentioned in the meeting that would suggest that we're not going to do any business at all.
Yeah. So the ideal scenario would be finishing the Champions League with the players you've got, and or sell a player for massive profits. basically.
Yeah, the get out of jail card is selling Richarlison, you know. Not that that makes any sense from a footballing point of view, but from a financial point of view, it would do. If we didn't qualify for the Champions League, and there was still these financial pressures on the club, then that's an option. I don't think it's an option anybody would want. Obviously, no fan would want it. And I suspect the club doesn't want it. But who knows what deal we've got with Richarlison? I know that they had talks in the summer, and it was very clear that we were going to get pushed for Europe this year, which is clearly something that Richarlison wants. But I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, go on, Terry.
No, that was it.
Yeah, it's just to kind of round off as well, because there's more we can go into about the AGM, but I would encourage you all to go and read Paul's article or listen to his Business Matters podcast, which he does with a few others, because they go into a lot more detail about the different aspects, and I would encourage you all to listen to it. But the kind of underlying thing here, when we talk about finances and what a lot of people want to know about, is transfers. Of course, when we came into the summer window, things looked bleak. The club managed, I mean, there was different things that I don't know the intricacies of, whether it was the extension of deadline, stuff like that. We did manage to pull off one of the best transfer windows we've had in years, quite frankly, in some of the most difficult circumstances. And Marcel Brands mentioned that it was one of the weirdest windows, I think he referred to it as. And that looked like a bit of a rabbit out the hat. No one really saw it coming. This time, I mean, it does really seem like we are going to do nothing in January. Is that right, Paul?
I think so. I think, to be fair to the club, I know this sounds as if always coming across negative about the club, trying very hard not to. I think the club did really good business in the summer. You know, I think both in terms of the prices that they paid for the players, but, you know, the players that they brought in, and clearly the Ancelotti effect is a big part of that. Although, you know, Brands did say that we'd wanted Ducore for 3 years. It's interesting that if we did want him for 3 years, why we hadn't been able to get him in earlier. Again, that question wasn't answered, but, you know, certainly getting Hammers in on a free is fantastic business. And the people I don't speak to many people on the football side, but the people I speak to on the football side that aren't at Everton Football Club, but there are other clubs, think that Alan is going to be one of the best buys that we've made in many years.
Yeah. It was a brilliant window as well. Yeah, go on, Terry.
Yeah.
No, I just completely agree with that. It especially looked better in comparison to some, you know, other windows. It was a window where every move, you know, was a good one. And I think just the club as a whole, things look better when you've got a good manager in place. That's something we haven't had, you know, the right manager in place. We haven't had the right manager in place since probably the first season of Roberto Martinez, or even if you want to be harsher, back to David Moyes. Because now Ancelotti's made other business prior to his arrival look better. Suddenly, Alex Iwobi doesn't look like a bad buy anymore, and Michael Keane's seen as probably the number one defender at the club, and, you know, there's question marks about him beforehand. So if we can stay in that vein, we, you know, and sort the, you know, keep some stability on the football side of things and start to make more of what we've got, then obviously that'll help on the financial side as well, because we'll be able to, you know, we'll have to keep buying and buying and buying. We've been buying to replace players we bought 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can stop doing that and just buy to add, not buy to replace. That'll help everything.
It seemed like a window where there was absolutely no room for error, and it doesn't look like they seem to make any mistakes yet. I mean, you know, touch wood, hope all the transfers carry on in the vein of form that they have had. Even Godfrey at the time, I mean, when he came in, I didn't know a lot about him. It did seem like quite a bit of money, but I mean, another brilliant acquisition. It seems like if there was ever somewhere where Marcel Brands had to get every deal absolutely right, it was this one, and he seems to have done so. And then just kind of the final point in the video here. I mean, how do we feel about doing no business in January? I'll come to you first, Harry. Do you feel like we've got a competitive enough squad to go on with the rest of the season and push for Europe, hopefully?
Yeah, I don't think there's a compelling case to do much business this January, even if all the financial side of things were rosy, because, you know, it is a buyer's market, but who could you point to out there who would be released by their club and could make a massive difference here? I think it's we're onto a hiding for nothing if we go and try and buy in this window, and I don't think even normal Januaries have been very good historically for the club. So I think the view the manager takes as well is, I'm going to get Alan and James and Dean back in the team after, you know, coming through the whole of December without them. And that you know, I hate the phrase and everyone else does, but they'll be like new signings going into one game a week again for the rest of the season. It might not take a new player. It might just take, you know, sticking with that consistency and that, you know, getting that team back together from the start of the season.
Yeah, I don't know if you agree with that, Paul. Are you quite happy with the general strength of the squad to hopefully end up qualifying at the end of the season for European football?
I'm happy with the first 11. I think most people would agree with that. That when we've got all of our players fit, we've got a fairly strong first 11. Certainly, a first 11 that compete at the top end of the league. I think two things I'd like to say about, well, actually three things I'd like to say about Ancelotti. First of all, Terry, your point about him improving previous signings is a really valid point, and I agree with that totally. I think the difference in Iwobi has just been amazing. Everybody's always thought there's a player there, but nobody really knew how to get that player out on the pitch, and he's done that. Embarrassing, I've just forgotten the last two points. So there's the three things about Iwobi, about Ancelotti, is he's improved past players. I think his man management skills are fantastic. And that's, that helps bring players in when we're in a position to bring players in. And I think the final point, and I don't think he gets enough credit for this, is his tactical awareness is just superb. He makes changes in games that really, really matter. And I can't sing his praises highly enough. It obviously an inspired acquisition to get him in the first instance. But I think we're really seeing the difference between a real master of his craft and a journeyman. And we've had too many journeymen sitting in the manager's seat, or people that just frankly shouldn't have been there. It really makes a difference to see a fantastic manager doing this stuff.
I completely agree. And I am conscious of time here. So, that's the end of my questions. Terry, I don't know if you've got anything else you'd like to add.
No closing statements. I completely agree with everything Paul said about Ancelotti. I can't say enough nice things about him. He's something we need to, build around, basically, like take advantage of.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, kind of just in summary, finances, not surprising. We're still spending more than we seem to have without Mashiri bankrolling us, but we can definitely look up. We have a very strong squad. We've got an absolutely brilliant manager that's hopefully going to lead us to European football at the end of the season. And then in the next couple of years, hopefully the AGMs are less propaganda and more just, talking about how brilliantly the club's doing both financially and on the pitch. So that does bring us to the end.
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. And welcome to a match preview ahead of our FA Cup fourth round game at Goodison on Sunday against Sheffield Wednesday. I'm joined by Paul McAllister, of course, and David from the County Road Bobblers. Warm welcome again, David. How are you doing, mate?
Good, thanks, yeah. Considering it's boring at the moment, isn't it? But getting through, waiting to be back at the ground. But hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
We'll have to wait and see, but it'd be nice to not have a couple of games not postponed. That would be really good.
And it's frustrating, isn't it? Especially when you're in a rich vein of form, as we've been in as a side. You get the momentum.
You capitalise on it, don't you?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So you don't want to be sitting around waiting all weekend for us to play again.
But, of course, with that in mind, we've come off the back of a win against Wolves, albeit over a week ago now, but go into this game in, decent form. We're up against the side, Sheffield Wednesday are in the bottom three in the Championship. Are you confident, David?
You've got to be, haven't you? You don't deserve to be in the competition if you're going to go out against a Championship side. You've always got to dig in these games, these sides. It's a big game for them, and it's a chance for them to try and recapture something in the season. maybe galvanised them a bit. But you look at their side, there's nothing to write home about. Like Barry Bannon, I think, plays midfield. You know, there's not a lot of talent knocking around there. You know, you'd like to feel like we can afford to maybe rest a few players while still keeping a strong side. But we don't want to be in a position where we're chasing the game again towards the end of the game like we did in the last leg. And I do believe we did that because we rested some key players like Doucouré. So you need to keep an semblance of the important players in the team and make sure that, you know, that balance, you get that right at the, you know, the starting 11.
I mean, Paul, what's your take on that? How many changes would you like to see, like, swapped in from the usual first team?
If everybody was fit, I'd like to see us go full strength, because I can't be having another performance like the one we saw against Rotherham. It was far too close for comfort, and some players came in and just didn't perform and, quite frankly, don't deserve another go in the side again this early.
I agree with that. I'll be honest, Paul. I have to agree wholeheartedly. I was saying, actually, just before we started rolling, to David, that I don't think some of these players are motivated enough. Some of these B-side players, the ones who are sitting on the bench, I don't think some of them have the desire to come on and put the effort in for this club. And I think these players need to be sold sooner rather than later. I think Tosin's obviously one of the ones that always gets thrown around, but I think for me, the one that really disappoints me is Bernard. I think he's absolutely washed up now at Everton.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of Bernard particularly. I mean, I don't think he's a terrible player. I don't think he's this sort of... When we were first bringing him in 2 years ago, during that summer where he left Shakhtar Donetsk, I've got to admit, I didn't know a lot about him, but the way a lot of people were speaking about him is in, he was this former Brazil international and he played in the Champions League and he'd had some good showings, and you go and do that classic look him up on YouTube, don't you, where he looks an absolute baller. So I thought we were going to bring in this, you know, a little mini David Silva type player, this absolute little wizard, who as soon as he got himself fully fit and firing, then he could probably be one of our players of the season. And I've just... He's not delivered at any point. I know we didn't get him for a fee. We got him on a free, so that helps the sting a little bit. But I class his tenure at Everton so far as very underwhelming. And I'm at the point now where I'd be more than happy to see the back of him. And I don't think he should be trusted in these games where, okay, we don't want to play our first team players if we can help it, but we can't trust putting too many B players in because they just won't deliver, because they haven't in the past. And he's one of them who falls into that category. I don't dislike him. He's not one of these players who's top of my list to get out. There's other players who I want to see shipped out first, but I just don't think he's got much use to the squad at all. And if we're not going to play our first choice left midfielder, I'd rather see Anthony Gordon given another go than Bernard, because even if Gordon comes in and doesn't really impress, at least he's getting precious minutes under his belt and he's getting experience.
And no matter what, Gordon works hard.
Yeah. Gordon will work harder, and Gordon will grow from playing in these games. He will get better. Whereas Bernard, I think we've seen all we need to see of him now.
Bernard's at his peak. If not, he's on his way down, I think so.
On paper, you should think a player like Bernard will be having his way with the likes of a bottom half top championship team. But as I mentioned earlier on, he's had games where he's come in against so-called lesser opposition and he's not done the business for me. So I don't think he's got any room to complain if he doesn't play at all. And Ancelotti, I think, has made his mind up on him. Clearly, Ancelotti doesn't hang his hat on him in the sense that he's going to keep him around for the long-term project. I think Bernard is on his way out. And if it's this month, then I think no one will be sad to see it happen.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if we hear the rumours are true about the potential move to Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia for, you know, we're talking like 9 million, 10 million, I think, for a free transfer to get rid of those wages. Someone we sign for free and then get them wages off our books. I think that's excellent business.
I don't see that happening myself, personally. Whenever you get these links from these oil-rich countries with no mark leagues, they always sound a bit fishy to me. I think that smells of an agent trying to generate some interest in him just to get his name out there in the hope that someone comes in. If, and even if it is real, I mean, I've just said a minute ago, I don't think Bernard's a mercenary or anything like that. I don't think he'd be happy to just go and have an early retirement in one of these no-mark leagues. I think he'd much prefer to go and play in somewhere like Roma, if that interest's real. So I don't see Bernard going to whatever they're called, the Qatari team.
Arabian, I think.
I mean, if the interest is real, then yeah, good. Like, I'll drive him to the airport, but I don't see that, and I don't think anyone should hold their breath. But just going back to the game, I don't want to see too many changes. If Calvert-Lewin's fit, I'd play Calvert-Lewin. If Richarlison's fit, I'd play him for a full 90. Decore is obviously going to play because he's banned for the midweek game, so you might as well play him to keep him sharp. And he will make a massive difference because I think he was the player we missed the most against Rotherham. So just play the team that will get this game won inside the first half. And then if you want to switch players out, then
give the reserves a go after the break if we are winning.
Yeah.
I think that's the key there. You know, when I was mentioned before about making a few changes, the only ones that I'd really make a change of, I like to keep the spine the same in these games. You know, you want a solid spine. So I'd like to see Big Mick Keane obviously play. You know, he's our kind of rock at the moment, isn't he? The Kegger Man, as he's been coined on that song the other day. You know, I think we can afford to play Olsen. He's, you know, steady Eddie in goal. You know, had a really good performance. He's one that maybe he could bring in. I'd like to see Godfrey maybe brought in rather than Mina just for this game. He's played at that level. You know, he knows the league a bit better. Obviously Dinier is getting back to full pace, so I'll probably play him again, give him another 90 minutes under his belts. Coleman still needs a bit of fitness, so I'll bring Coleman back in maybe again. I think Dukes needs to play. You know, he obviously, as you say, the suspension's coming up. You know, we should have plenty of time on the ball. Gomez, I'm not a massive fan of, but, you know, we should have a lot of time on the ball, so I'll probably go with Gomez there. And I like, you know, Gilfie seems a shoo-in to play there, as, you know, being as big a critic at times, but, you know, it's a game that really, you know, he should get a few chances there. And like you say there, I'd actually go slightly different. I'd go with Richarlison up front. I just think he needs a goal at the moment. He's one of them players that, you know, when it go, you know, I still feel as though there's going to be a run of form for him where he's going to go, you know, six or seven games and score seven or eight goals. You know, he hasn't really had that patch this so far this season, and, you know, with injuries and suspensions, everything's gone against him. So yeah, if Calvert-Lewin's fit, I'd probably put him on the bench and give him the last half an hour. But I'd play Richarlison as number nine, get him through the centre, and let's try and get him a couple of goals so he's firing again into form. I definitely wouldn't be looking at playing Cenk Tosun. He makes prime James Beattie look like Usain Bolt at times. You know, he just can't run. And some of the moments in that last game, you know, we were playing the ball long from our from our half, trying to get on the attack, and he was offside. And you're thinking, what else you've got to do? You just keep, well, the only thing you've got to do at the moment is watch the line and be ready for a ball coming towards you. And he was offside, I think, twice in you know, consecutive row. And I was thinking, you know, what are you actually doing? Obviously, he got the goal, and it was a great bit of invention by Anthony Gordon. I agree, he should play. But, you know, apart from that, he just really didn't do anything at all. You know, his miraculous hair was the only talking point for me that seems to grow back every game. But yeah, on the Bernard point, fully agree. I was a bit of a Bernard fan when he came. He works hard and all that kind of stuff. But the products were just not getting there. He's not scoring goals. He's not getting assists. And at the end of the day, if we're wanting to push on, he needs to be chipping in with them, and you just can't see that happening for us. So I think it's right time to really move him on. 18 months left on his contract as well. So
definitely.
Problem with Tosun is we've seen now that even when he plays in a cup game against the lower league side, he just can't lead the line on his own. He can't. Not in English football. Even championship level defenders are just too big and too strong for him. And the marking amount of games, I know he did well to get that chip goal early on against Rotherham, but other than that, and other than that goal that he had took off him later on, he wasn't in the proceedings at all. What did he do between whatever minute it was that he scored the chip and then 5 minutes from the end when he got on the end of that header from Rodriguez? It's like he wasn't even there.
Lost the ball, mainly.
Yeah, it's like having a statue up front. He's in the wrong country, he's in the wrong team. But he's in the wrong type of league anyway. He's just not going to thrive here. And he probably wouldn't thrive even lower down the table if he went back to Palace or he went to Brighton. He'd do better than he's doing here. He'd probably get six, seven, eight goals, but that's nothing to write home about, really, when you're an international level striker who's going to tournaments, which is what he wants to be. So Tosin, no,
he's been to the Euros before, and, you know.
Yeah, and he was meant to. He was one of the big reasons that he went to Palace on loan last season, was to get himself playing regular football ahead of the Euros. So Tosin, whatever you think of him, he has a bit of a reputation on the continent. Do you know what I mean? So he's not good enough to lead a line in English football, even when you play him against poor opposition like a bottom half championship side, because he's had enough opportunities now and he just doesn't take his moments. It might sound like I'm being harsh because he did score against Rotherham, but his overall performance when you added it all up just didn't account to much at all. So I want to see our best striker up front, because I just want to get goals in this game. And if you play DCL and Richarlison, then I think you're guaranteed that we'll put two or three past Sheffield, surely.
Yeah, I think the first team's very good, but is there any way that Sheffield Wednesday could hurt us?
I watched, I put myself through the pain of watching the extended highlights before on the Derby game, out of curiosity, you know, and they look a very disjointed side. They've got a really big lad up front. I think he's a Scottish international. Name doesn't spring to mind.
Gordon Rhodes. Patterson.
Patterson, yeah. And I think he's got 4 goals in 20 games. Seems one of these, you know, a bit of a goal mouth striker, you know, where if something drops, he'll put it in with his knee or his shin. You know, there was a lad on the wing that seemed pretty tricky on the left wing. And when I say tricky, you know, for that level, and bar that, he just had not. And Barry Bannon was the fella pulling the strings in the middle. And that says it all, really. You know, a bit of a journeyman kind of playmaker in midfield, isn't he? So one thing I did notice is that Bannon on the set pieces seemed to be a highlight for them. You know, every time they got a set piece, it seemed to be something they were relying on. So we're pretty good at set pieces, so that's a positive, but we just don't want to be in a position where we give them, you know, a chance. We want to put 2 or 3 goals past them quite soon off and just kill them off altogether. They seem very vulnerable as well. A couple of games I watched of them earlier on crosses and balls into the box, so it'd be nice to see us get bodies into that box and really cause them issues. And like I say, let's just go out there and try and score 2 or 3 goals in that first half hour. And like Paul said before, then we can, you know, we can maybe rest a few towards the end of the game when it's dead and buried.
Yes, definitely the right strategy to take.
Is Callum Patterson that big lump with the moustache who Neil Warnock just dubbed up front for Cardiff?
Yeah, he's got a terrible moustache. If he scores against us, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah, he used to be a
oh
defender.
Oh my God, the state of that.
Yeah, do you not remember him, James?
Oh my God, it actually looked like the picture of a young Alavés when he was still playing.
Yeah, he was playing for Cardiff in the Premier League a couple of years ago, and I think he used to be a defender in his early years.
He's a centre mid.
Yeah, it was your centre mid, but I know he's a big unit of a fella, and Cardiff were just that desperate for goals that season because they were fighting relegation that they just shoved him up front and just literally went route one and hoped that they could get a lucky bounce. That's just an honest footballer. So I think by the signs that we know what Sheffield's best hope is, they're just going to come, they're going to be physical, they're going to try and outman us and outwork us for it. And if the attitude's like it was against Rotherham, then there's a good chance that they might get success with that. Because if they just throw the ball up field and a couple of players at the back, Mina springs to mind, or maybe Holgate, if one of them just has a loss of concentration for a second, then a lucky ball could drop for them and they could stick it away. And the last thing you want is for these to score, especially in the first half when maybe they take the lead or they equalise like Rotherham did, and then everyone just kind of gets a bit nervy thinking, oh, that wasn't in the script. And I just can't be having that happen. So as long as everyone is concentrating and everyone tightens up and they drill the set pieces in the days beforehand, then there shouldn't be too much of a problem, really.
I think that's the one thing. I think Decore has to play to... We need players who will fight in the midfield, and I think Decore will do that. Tom Davis will, but is he physical enough? I don't know. But other players like Gomez and that, I'm not sure if they've got the stomach for the fight.
Gomez is stronger on the ball than Davis, isn't he? He doesn't move the ball as fast as Davis does, but he is better at protecting it and using his body strength. So I'd probably play him over Davis. I think Davis was a better fit against Rotherham. I know he didn't play well on the day, but in a team like that would just swarming all over us, having a player like Davis who'd get the ball and move it quickly was probably a better idea to have. Whereas a team like Sheffield, who are probably just going to fancy a bit of a physical fight, then I think having Gomez and Decore would probably be a better option because they can both look after themselves.
Yeah. And that in mind, the front four, you can see there then, Sigurdsson as the 10.
It will be him, but I wouldn't put him there personally. I'd like us to just go 4-3-3 and play Richarlison on the left, Iwobi on the right, and Calvert-Lewin as through the middle, because that's our most informed attacking three at the moment. But Sigurdsson's going to play. You know, he will. He'll play as a number 10 behind whoever's up front. Anthony Gordon, I think, will probably play. It'll be Gordon or Bernard, I think. One of them will get in. They'll play on the left, and on the right might be Richarlison. It might be Iwobi. You don't know, do you? But
depends who gets the nod up front. I'd like to see Richie get the nod up front. I don't really want to see Toten from the start.
No, I don't want to see 4-2-3-1. I hate that formation. And if you're gonna play 4-4-2, then maybe there's an argument to put Toten in there. But if you're gonna play 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, do not play with Toten, please, because he just can't lead the line, no matter who's behind him.
There you go. So we'll leave it at that anyway. Predictions, guys, David.
I just think we'll go heavy on them quite early doors. I'm going 4-0 Everton. I think it's going to be a convincing one. I think we'll bury them first half an hour, 2-3 goals, and then a bit of a total one at the end, just to round it off.
Paul?
I think it will be similar to what we saw at Salford earlier on the season. I'll go for a 3-0. I don't see them scoring. I think we'll maybe get one or two in the first half. That will settle everybody. Then the game will just kind of go into a lull for 20 minutes either side of half time, and then maybe we'll catch them out again, carve them open in the latter half of the game. So I'll go for a 3-0.
I did the opposition view with Dan Fudge from Wednesday week yesterday, and I predicted a 2-1 win. I think this isn't going to be anywhere near as easy as people are making it out to be. I think it'll be a slog. But I think we'll do it.
Well, you know more about them than I do. When I told you on that video when we drew them out the hat that they're not a team that I keep an eye on, particularly. All I know about them is that they've parted ways with Tony Pulis. And if they still had Pulis there, then I would be a lot more concerned, because you know that they will just be really organised and tough to break down. But who's in charge there now? Have they got a permanent manager?
Neil Thompson, he's a caretaker manager.
The name doesn't ring a bell. I don't really know anything about him, but is he officially a caretaker? He's not like the permanent guy.
I have no idea, to be honest. But
he is the caretaker at the moment. So I think looked at the favourites, the managers before, there was the fella who got the Serbian fella who got sacked by Wofford was the main. That's the one. And
is he the one who? Yeah, the fella who fell out with Deeney.
The one who benched Deeney. He's the favourite, and Paul Cook, the second favourite cookie there as well. They haven't had anyone in yet, but I think they are still expecting to point some more.
Well, that helps, because I think if there's a caretaker there, then a caretaker's only comes in to manage a team just to get results in the league, doesn't he? These caretakers very rarely put any stock in the cups, because they're not going to get any credit for it if they win, because someone else is going to come in and take the job in the next week or two anyway.
That's an interesting take, actually, Paul. Let's hope that's the case.
I hope so, because usually when there's a new permanent manager there, and the expectation is that he's got his feet under the desk and that he's going to actually build something, then I think everyone kind of perks up a little bit. Whereas when the caretaker's just there, it just kind of feels like take one day at a time, one game at a time. If we lose in a cup, then it's not the end of the world, because it's not what we're all concentrating on. We're all just waiting for the new manager to come in and whip us into shape in the league.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it at that anyway, and let's hope it's a bit more of David and Paul's position than it is mine. But for you podcast listeners, of course, it's time for the classic quiz. Paul and David are going to go head to head in a classic matchday squad quiz, and David, since it's you, returning to the channel after a brief absence, shall we say. I'll let you do the coin toss. Do you want to go heads or tails?
Tails.
Tails for David, and it's heads. So, Paul, you get to pick. Do you want to go first or second, Paul, on this one?
I'll go first, please.
Going first, okay. Paul, you're up first. And time to reveal the fixture in question. Let's cue the intense quiz music. It's a very intense quiz music for a not a very intense game, I'll be honest.
I hate these. I really, if this is a noise era one, then I've lost the...
We're going back to to Paul's favourite time, the Roberto Martinez era for this one.
Okay, maybe. I've blocked out a lot of that, but not as much as the latter half Moyes years.
Well, the question is, Paul, did you block out Krasnodar 1, Everton 1, Europa League, 2nd of October 2014?
No, I actually remember that. I went round to Terry's house. Well, at his house, he was living in a flat at the time. I went because it was a crazy kickoff, like 5:30, 6:00, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I just got out of uni, I think.
Yeah, it was because of Russian time. It was a kick-off around tea time. So I remember finishing from work and getting over to Terry's flat to watch it with him. And we wore white with purple shorts, didn't we?
We did indeed. So this is a very good... you're really painting a very good picture of this. So if you can paint half as good a team, geez, you might have this one, won't mate.
I think he's won it already, personally. I'm awful with me, so go on.
Go on, Paul. Who are you going to go for first?
Of who played?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I got it wrong on my first guess last time. So now I remember this specifically because he had an argument with one of their bin players, and I remember just laughing, thinking, "Who is he squaring up to one of our players?" John Stones.
Yeah, John Stones was a starter. Yeah. Played the full game.
I've literally got this is white from my head, so I'm gonna have to go with.
Romelu Lukaku was actually a used substitute. He came on at half time, but yeah, Lukaku did feature. So it's any starter or used substitute who took part in this game. So yeah, Lukaku also took part. Paul,
The man who scored the late equaliser, the one and only Samuel Eto'o.
Indeed, Samuel Eto'o, the only goal scorer. What was that, David?
You signed Lambus, we signed Samuel Eto'o.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was just, was that his first goal for Everton?
No, he scored on his debut against Chelsea, but we got beat 6-3, so we tried and washed that one out.
Oh, yeah, he came on but, and then scored like immediately, didn't he? Like a consolation.
So, yeah. Who's up next, David? Tell me the date.
I was just going to point out an interesting tidbit. I think I might be right. Is that the last time Samuel Eto'o scored in a European competition?
May well have been, I don't know.
Well, a legend, scored in Champions League finals and things like that. I came to the Europa League to play.
Last goal was an equaliser against Krasnodar.
Yeah, he left in the January, not long after, and I don't think he's kind of went down after Everton. He was on the way down.
He went to Sampdoria after us.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting bit of trivia. That
I'll have to go and channel me in a geek again and go look into that. But that's for another day. David?
Sorry, David.
That's all right. I'm trying to think of the only... I'm just going to have to... Because I can't remember, I'm just going to have to go for the one with the knowns that, you know, that probably wasn't played. So I'm going to go for Ross Barkley?
Ross Barkley didn't play.
Oh, I told you to remember this.
He was injured to start that season, wasn't he, for the first few months?
Yeah, he has a bit of trouble. But, yeah, that means, of course, Paul wins the quiz, but we'll still go on anyway. I'll tell you now, though, that just to save you a bit of time, that Lukaku was the only used substitute. Martinez didn't make any more subs, so you've only got starters to go from, and of course you've already got John Stones and Samuel Eto'o to who you've already reeled off. There's 9 to go.
Aidan McGeady.
Yeah, Aidan McGeady played the full game. God knows how.
My God.
Stephen Naismith. Would he have played instead of
Steve Naismith never come off the bench. He was an unused sub.
So it sounds like he's rotated this a bit as well. So
yeah,
are we just trying to? Is Garbutt still there then?
He was there, but he's not in the squad at all.
or Galloway. It'd be one of the, maybe one of the two.
No Galloway.
Besic. That was the summer we signed Besic, wasn't it?
Yeah, Besic was unused as well. He'd been unused sub.
I saw my sequel well off of this, aren't we?
Gareth Barry.
Yeah, Gareth Barry played the full game.
McCarthy.
No McCarthy. Wasn't even on the bench.
Was T. Cleves there?
T. Cleves wasn't there till next season after this. But he wasn't there.
Who's our centre half of?
Tim Howard in goal.
Howard was between the sticks, yeah.
Is this stand still there?
No, this stand.
I just might as well give up here, mightn't I?
Stones and Jagielka, was it?
Yeah, Jagielka was the other centre back.
Yeah, Alcaraz have been bins off, hadn't he?
Alcaraz was there, but he was on the bench.
Oh, yeah. Alcaraz went to have that game in Kiev, didn't he?
Yeah.
See, that's the part I had left out, yeah.
I didn't like the fact I had to bring that up, to be honest. I hate that game.
When Stones was on the bench as well, back fit, wasn't he, for that game? And he wouldn't.
Stones was sent off in the game in the previous rounds. And then
Young Boys against Young Boys, yeah.
Yeah, he was sent off in the Young Boys game. And Martinez had a feud with Distance, so we wouldn't like pick him. So he had, Alcaraz.
So
I remember Peter Reid saying at half time, because he was in the panel, wasn't he? And he was saying, like, if it was up to him, he'd pull him off. And he just left.
Yeah,
him.
I remember specifically, he said, if I was him, Martinez, I'd tell Alcaraz, because he'd been awful in the first half. You go out and you win the first header, or you're coming off immediately and you're never playing again. But yeah, Martinez was Martinez, wasn't he?
Martinez most certainly was Martinez. And Martinez picked this team. You've got two more. How many more have we got? Two, three, four.
If we've gone with all the
five more, five
Baines
more.
It's got to be Baines then, surely. Galloway,
yeah, it was Leighton Baines at left back.
Yeah, Oviedo wasn't back from his broken leg yet, was he?
No.
So four more. So we had McGeady was on the wing. Who was the other winger?
Seamus there? Seamus boy?
No, Seamus. Seamus wasn't in the squad at all.
Morales?
No Morales in the squad at all.
Oh.
Christ almighty. Who was our backup right back for Coleman? I'm trying to think on now.
Tony Hibbert.
It was Tony Hibbert.
Is he still there then, Hibbert? Under Martia? See, my memory's awful at times.
Yeah, Tony Hibbert. So what's that, two more we need now?
Three more.
There's the left winger, because McGeady would have been on the right, and there's the centre midfielder with Barry, isn't there?
Well, yeah, here's the interesting thing. The two centre mids with Barry wouldn't be who you think they were, and McGeady was on the left, so it was somebody else coming off the right.
Jesus.
Very much sounds like a Martinez side, this, doesn't it?
Like a Coleman side, right? I'm trying to think. Who else did we have on the wing during that time? I know we had. I thought it was Morales. I'm shocked he wasn't there. I know he played against Wolfsburg and scored. Was Darren Gibson?
Darren Gibson did play. Darren Gibson managed a full 90 minutes in this game.
My God!
Alongside Gareth Barry in the middle. So you've got the number 10 and the right wing to get.
He bought home a lot of Russian vodka.
Did Jerry play?
Who the play? Well,
no, I don't think he was there. That was the year he went to Sevilla, I think.
Was that the year he went there, was it?
Did you?
That was the year Jerry was with us in Martinez's first season. Then he went back to Barcelona. And then Barcelona loaned him back out to Sevilla, but he didn't really do much. And then we brought him back because Barca didn't want him and they couldn't sell him to anyone else. So,
yeah. Well, it wasn't De La Feu. There was a player we had in between De La Feu, the two De La Feu seasons.
I thought it was McGeady.
Very, very, even more forgettable than McGeady.
River dancing with Aidan McGrady.
Can you give us a clue? What's his nationality?
Ghanaian.
That lad at Newcastle. Yeah,
you see that too, yeah. Atsu. Yeah. Atsu Curry. Oh. Yeah.
And then one more to get, lads. One more to get.
My God.
The number 10 in Barkley's absence.
So, he wasn't there.
If it wasn't Naismith, then.
Wouldn't have been Kone, because he was.
Wasn't Kone.
King Aruna.
What else? What of it? Was this a player that Martin has signed, or was he already there?
He was already there. Pretty much already there.
Osman.
Yeah, it was Leon Osman.
Osman.
Leon Osman played in the number 10.
That should be the first name, shouldn't it? Into the side there.
Yeah, but yeah, so there's your team. It was Tim Howard, Tony Ibbett, John Stones, Phil Jagielka, Leighton Baines, Darren Gibson, Gareth Barry, Leon Osman, Aidan McGeady, Christian Atu and Samuel Eto'o, and Lukaku was the only substitute that came on. The other subs were Joel Robles, Brian Oviedo, Lukaku the huge sub, Steve Naismith, Mo Besic, Tyus Browning, and your best mate, Antolin Alcaraz. But there you go, Paul, you won the quiz. You get to pick a song to see us out. What are you going to go with? And no soap opera theme, tunes.
No. Because I'm quite hopeful that we're going to do well in this cup competition, and I'm just hopeful in general that we've got Carlo Ancelotti as manager and that Donald Trump's not the president anymore, I'll go with Frank Sinatra, High Hopes.
Good one. Very good one. There you have it. High Hopes for the upcoming games and hopefully for the rest of the season. And we'll be seeing off this show with High Hopes by Frank Sinatra, courtesy of Paul's Decisions. And of course, Paul winning the quiz. And of course, thank you guys for tuning on the Toffee Blues. A great thanks as well to David for coming on from County Road Bobblers. Definitely give them a follow because they're the boss. Definitely check them out. And of course, until next time, thank you guys for tuning in on the Toffee Blues and we'll see you then. He's got high hopes. He's got high. Low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes. He had high apple pie in the sky hopes. So anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. There goes another problem, Kerplop. Oops, there goes another problem, Kerplop. Oops, there.